I'm opposed to having a brother and sister be together and call that marriage. I'm opposed to an older guy marrying a child and calling that a marriage.
Do you think those are equivalent to gays getting married?
Oh, I do.
Oh, I do. Oh, I do.
People give me these assignments because they, on some level, want to hear what I have to say, which is the greatest privilege on earth. I mean, being listened to is truly the greatest privilege on earth. There's nothing better.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Heterosexual inclusion kills Hungary's partnerships law. Activists fume over Obama's clerical error. And don't get too comfortable around writer David Rakoff. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 20th, 2008. Hungary's Constitutional Court ruled this week that the country's registered partnerships law, due to take effect in January, is unconstitutional. The legislation, passed by Parliament last December, provided marriage-like rights to same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples. Several petitions submitted to the court by Christian conservative groups opposed the law because they said it equated gay and lesbian partnerships with marriage. The court said it had no problem with the registry for same-gender couples, but that the law couldn't include heterosexual couples who already have the right to marry. Creating a near-duplicate institution for those couples, the court wrote, also contradicted the special protection of marriage in the Hungarian Constitution. LGBT rights activists called on the government to introduce a new registry law that applies only to gay and lesbian couples. Supporters worry that some MPs who voted for the original legislation because it offered an alternative to heterosexual couples may not support a new same-gender couples-only bill.
Sweden's highest court this week rejected a petition from a gay couple who sought recognition of their legal Canadian marriage in their home country. Married couples in Sweden pay a lower income tax rate than single people, and the country currently offers only civil unions to gay and lesbian couples. Lars Garfelt and Lars Arnell, each priests in the Church of Sweden, argued that having to pay the higher tax rate was discriminatory. But the court ruled that the country's laws don't recognize the marriage of a same-gender couple, and that their Canadian marriage was legally a civil union in Sweden. A parliamentary committee studying the issue last year said that civil unions, created in 1995, are outdated and recommended the passage of marriage equality legislation. Six of Sweden's seven political parties support such a measure, with only the small Christian Democratic Party opposing. Prime Minister Fredrik Reinfeldt said last month that a bill making marriage gender neutral is on track and should become law by next May.
In California, each side filed briefs late this week for the Supreme Court's pending hearing on the validity of Proposition 8. Almost 53% of the state's voters approved that measure, which overturned the High Court's May marriage equality ruling and constitutionally defined marriage as heterosexual only. LGBT legal advocates are arguing that the proposition was not a simple amendment to the Constitution, which requires only a majority vote. They say that by denying what the court called the fundamental right to marry to a legitimate minority group, gays and lesbians, the measure was an attempted revision of the Constitution, which requires a two-thirds vote. In a move that surprised some, the brief submitted by California Attorney General Jerry Brown agreed with Prop 8 opponents. He had originally promised to support the measure as part of his duties to defend state laws, but said that after studying the issue, he concluded that its passage was unconstitutional. Proposition 8 must be invalidated, he said in a prepared statement, because the amendment process cannot be used to extinguish fundamental constitutional rights without compelling justification. And, he noted, the court's original marriage equality ruling found none.
Proposition 8 supporters not only defend the ballot measure in their briefs as a simple amendment, but are also asking the court to nullify the approximately 18,000 gay and lesbian marriages that were conducted between the time the Supreme Court ruling took effect in mid-June and the passage of Proposition 8 on November 4th. They've never, until now, announced that as a goal. Rick Jacobs of the anti-Proposition 8 Courage campaign said he was appalled that the move was buried in a legal brief. If Proposition 8's sponsors plan to destroy lives, he said, they should at least have the courage to admit it publicly. The High Court is not expected to hear arguments in the case until at least March. ProtectMarriage.com and the Proposition 8 Legal Defense Fund did announce this week that Kenneth Starr will serve as the lead counsel and argue their case to the court. Starr's infamous $70 million investigation of alleged financial improprieties by the Clintons in the late 1990s turned up evidence only of the president's dalliance with Monica Lewinsky. That led to Clinton's impeachment by the House of Representatives, but the Senate acquitted him.
Incoming President Barack Obama this week nominated the first openly LGBT person to his new administration. She's now Los Angeles Deputy Mayor Nancy Sutley, but if confirmed by the Senate as expected, she'll join the new president as head of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Sutley has a strong background on those issues and before becoming L.A. Deputy Mayor, served in various capacities at federal and state environmental agencies.
Obama's choice for Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, appears to be an LGBT ally. He backed the creation of a high school for LGBT students in his native Chicago, a plan that was hastily withdrawn after criticism from some other officials. Some LGBT advocacy groups also opposed the school, saying that integration and safety, not segregation, was needed to protect sexual minority students on campus.
There were also suggestions this week that Obama plans to name an openly gay man to be Secretary of the Navy. Several members of Congress and retired members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are reportedly recommending William White, the president of New York's Intrepid Sea Air and Space Museum, to fill that post. It's a civilian job, so his appointment wouldn't violate the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on openly lesbi-gay service members. But Obama angered LGBT advocates and many progressive supporters this week by inviting a vocal opponent of LGBT equality to give the invocation at his inauguration. We'll have more about Pastor Rick Warren later in the program.
The outgoing Bush administration took what is probably its final dump on LGBT Americans this week by refusing to sign an unprecedented statement presented to the General Assembly of the United Nations affirming the human rights of sexual minorities and calling for their protection around the world. We urge states to take all the necessary measures, in particular legislative or administrative, the draft document read, to ensure that sexual orientation or gender identity may under no circumstances be the basis for criminal penalties, in particular executions, arrests, or detention. It was proposed by France and read on December 18th by Argentinian Ambassador Jorge Arguello and was the first ever discussion of the rights of LGBT people in the United Nations General Assembly. Alone among major Western nations and in strange alliance with members of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, who actively opposed the statement, U.S. officials variously cited the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and the fear of infringing on U.S. state rights as reasons for not joining 66 of the U.N.'s 192 member countries to support the statement, including every nation in the European Union, several Eastern European and Latin American countries, Israel, Nepal, Japan, and a few African countries. Paula Edelbrick of the U.S.-based International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission called the Bush administration's position appalling. To the surprise of some, South Africa, one of the world's most legislatively lesbi-gay progressive countries, also failed to sign the statement. China, Russia, and India also didn't sign on.
About 55 countries actively opposed the initiative. Arab nations, led by Syria, issued a joint statement charging that such social normalization could lead to the legitimization of many deplorable acts, including pedophilia. Consensual adult same-gender sex remains a crime in more than 75 countries around the world. In at least seven countries, convictions carry a possible death sentence. But Dutch Foreign Minister Maxime Verhagen called it a very special day at the UN. For the first time in history, he told reporters, a large group of member states speaks out in the General Assembly against discrimination based on sexual orientation. With today's statement, this is no longer a taboo within the UN.
And finally, LGBT people and their allies in two Asian locales celebrated Pride in the waning days of 2008. Manila's 14th annual parade was held on December 6th, followed by a Miss Queen Philippines beauty pageant and street party. For the first time, a handful of Christian fundamentalists picketed the parade in protest. But also for the first time, smaller pride events were held that weekend in a few other cities around the country. What some called a truly revolutionary pride march was held in Hong Kong on December 13th. About 1,000 people took part in the conservative former British colony's first such official event. Several expatriates and visitors from mainland China and Taiwan joined colorfully dressed locals waving rainbow flags in the 2-mile procession through the city center, passing hundreds of mostly bemused onlookers. Organizers had overcome resistance by several government agencies and local businesses to pull it off. A few small demonstrations obliquely calling for sexual minority rights have been held in Hong Kong over the past few years, but many of their relative handful of participants often wore masks to conceal their identities. One of the organizers of the Closet Bursting December 13th march, Connie Chan, called it a complete success, telling reporters that it was time for Hong Kong to have a regular pride parade, just like other modern Asian cities.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 20th, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
Later in the program, we don't get too comfortable with a gay gonzo journalist. But first, many progressives in the U.S., especially in the LGBT community, are angry at Barack Obama. The president-elect announced this week that he's invited prominent evangelical minister Rick Warren to deliver the invocation at his inauguration. Pastor Warren heads Southern California's Saddleback Church and appears to be the successor to religious right leaders Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell on the national stage. He shares their views opposing reproductive rights and LGBT equality and told the Wall Street Journal last week why same-gender couples shouldn't be allowed to marry. There was extensive media coverage of Obama's controversial pick when the story broke on December 18th, but none topped the insightful perspective of openly lesbian commentator Rachel Maddow on her self-titled MSNBC cable TV show. Here are some tasty morsels.
Why the controversy about Rick Warren? This might help.
I'm opposed to having a brother and sister be together and call that marriage. I'm opposed to an older guy marrying a child and calling that a marriage. I'm opposed to one guy having multiple wives and calling that marriage.
Do you think those are equivalent to gays getting married?
Oh, I do.
I think that the prospect of a same-sex couple getting married is the equivalent of pedophilia and incest. Oh, I do. Now you see what the controversy is all about. Americans who support gay rights are miffed about this choice, to say the least, which is probably to be expected. What may have been underestimated by the Obama folks who undoubtedly factored gay backlash into the decision to choose Rick Warren was just how much the gay community and its supporters are not in the mood to be kicked around again right now. President-elect Obama defended himself on the subject today at a press conference that, of course, was supposed to be about something totally different than this.
I think that it is no secret that I am a fierce advocate for equality for gay and lesbian Americans. I would note that a couple of years ago, I was invited to Rick Warren's church to speak, despite his awareness that I held views that were entirely contrary to his when it came to gay and lesbian rights.
The implication of Senator Obama's defense is that he is returning the favor, returning the invitation that Pastor Warren so generously offered to him when he invited Obama to Saddleback. But Obama is not inviting Rick Warren to his church or into his campaign or something. He's inviting him to the nation's capital to convene the swearing-in of the next president of the United States. The president-elect did not invite Warren to his home. He invited him, proverbially, to ours, the nation's, which has raised hackles in the gay community and among those who support gay rights across the country because it begs the question as to whether Obama thinks the right spiritual clarion for the nation to start his presidency is from a man who has been so immoderate in taking up his position in the culture war. Rick Warren has compared abortion to the Holocaust. As you've heard, he has compared same-sex relationships to pedophilia and incest. He was a vocal proponent of the anti-gay marriage proposition in California, arguing falsely that allowing same-sex couples to be married would result in hate speech charges against people who disagreed with homosexuality. Pastor Rick Warren gets a lot of national media credit for highlighting the religious evangelical interest in non-traditional issues like climate change and genocide in Darfur. But just because he talks about issues that American evangelicals don't frequently talk about doesn't mean that he has anything other than a traditional hard right perspective on those traditional culture war issues that evangelicals really do like to talk about.
Analysis by the openly lesbian commentator on her MSNBC Rachel Maddow show. The issue was President-elect Obama's controversial choice of evangelical Christian leader Rick Warren to deliver the opening blessing at his inauguration. Obama did ask the Reverend Joseph Lowery, founder with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and an outspoken supporter of full equality for LGBT people, to deliver the inauguration's benediction. Nevertheless, openly gay Congressman Barney Frank said he was deeply offended by the president-elect's decision to offer Warren such a high-profile spotlight on the national stage, calling it a profound slap in the face to LGBT Americans and all who stand for equality. Equality California leader Jeffrey Kors said he's declined his invitation to attend the inauguration. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Rhea Carey called Warren's selection a divisive choice, and Joe Salmanese of the Human Rights Campaign said it was disrespectful to the LGBT people who supported Obama's presidential candidacy by an almost 75% margin. Pastor Warren reacted to the firestorm with a statement commending Obama for his courage to willingly take enormous heat from his base by inviting someone like me with whom he doesn't agree on every issue. He lauded what he called their shared commitment to model civility in America. But a statement on the Saddleback Church's website warns that someone unwilling to repent of their homosexual lifestyle would not be accepted as a member. In the end, long after this controversy has become a footnote in history, it will be the Obama presidency's policies and actions on LGBT issues that matter.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives as our thanks for your support. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
Canadian-born essayist David Rakoff is a pretty funny guy, but he's not just joking. Like his sometime collaborator David Sedaris, but with a world view through a very different queer filter, Rakoff gained national attention in the U.S. with a series of public radio pieces. Many of those were included in his first book, Fraud. He recently toured Australia to promote his latest collection, Don't Get Too Comfortable, where he got comfortable, but not too comfortable, with This Way Out's John Frame in Brisbane.
You are a journalist by trade.
Yeah, whatever training I have, such as it is as a reporter, as a journalist.
What we see in Don't Get Too Comfortable, mm-hmm. Some articles that really probably lend a bit to the Hunter S. Thompson Gonzo journalism style. But do you see yourself doing that?
How do you mean Gonzo? How do you understand that?
Almost as if what you're doing is going out and making the story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of it, in fact, is going out and making the story for that reason, to explore something, you know, to see if I can do a 20-day fast and achieve enlightenment, things like that, you know. Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely that aspect to it. I mean, I'm an experiential writer, so it stands to reason that I would do stuff like that, I think.
Yep.
I'm the luckiest guy alive. I really say it with no fear of contradiction. I'm the luckiest guy in North America. I am given access to things that I would never in my daily life ever be able to get into or see or experience. And even better, you know, people give me these assignments because they, on some level, want to hear what I have to say, which is the greatest privilege on earth. I mean, being listened to is truly the greatest privilege on earth. There's nothing better.
I get the impression from all of your stories that you're not writing to set up a joke. These stories are independently interesting.
Yeah, being funny is, I like being funny, and the hope is that I am sort of funny in a kind of a melancholic and rueful way, but the joke is very rarely the actual point. If a joke comes, it's simply because of the way I see things. But no, there's a, you know, the primary purpose is to tell the story or to make the point, the larger point.
How much of your work do you think is really informed by, or perhaps exclusively affected by, the fact that you're a gay man?
I'd say all of it and none of it. You know, I am gay, but it's not, it's, in terms of my work, it's kind of beside the point, and it's kind of completely the filter through which I see everything. But it's also, you know, the fact that I'm Jewish is the filter through which I see everything. The fact that I live in New York is the filter through which I see everything. The fact that I was born and raised in Canada. You know, all these things are ineluctably bound up one with the other. So it's not like I can tease them, the fibers apart of that sort of braid of identity. But I live in New York City, and I work in the media, where everybody I know is essentially out. I don't really know many people who aren't just out as a matter of course in a completely unselfconscious way. You know, it's not, and I think for generations younger than myself, it's even more casual. I'm sure elsewhere it's different and it's still a huge struggle, but that's not my personal experience in this day and age.
Right. So we hear of musicians and actors that I've spoken to will say that they're well aware that the fact that they were open about their sexuality did close some doors to them. Have you experienced that at all?
No, I mean, it's different in writing. It's completely different in journalism. It's not, they're not even remotely connected. But, you know, insofar as anybody knows who I am, and nobody knows who I am, but insofar as anybody does know who I am, it's different. The public's relationship to a writer is not one of projection. Writing is about disclosure. Even though I don't talk about my family and I don't talk about my life and I don't really talk personally beyond this very controlled revelation, it's still disclosure. It's not like being an actor where you're essentially a blank screen onto which they can project their own assumptions about what you are, and they need for you to be straight in order for them to buy you as a leading man or a leading woman or whatever. I think we get a long way to go before an actor can be fully out. There are a few candidates, I think, who might manage. There's an actor on Broadway currently named Cheyenne Jackson, who's in the Broadway show Xanadu. And he's, you know, virtuosically talented, really funny, and really, really good-looking, and completely out. And he seems to have the potential to be the first out movie star. I mean, movie star, not character actor who plays a hotel concierge. You know, like a leading man with a female love interest. And I don't think anybody would care. But who knows?
In several of your stories, you do speak a little bit self-effacively, as if you're not terribly happy, perhaps, with your looks or your life, but are you actually just having a bit of a lend of the reader?
No, I'm not. I'm not, you know, the way I look has never been my calling card. I mean, that's actually not true. The way my physical appearance was very, very much part of my identity as a child because I was tiny. And when I essentially didn't manifest physically, I was so small for my age until I was about 17. So insofar as the way I looked was my currency, yes, I developed conversation as a result. I learned how to speak. I became very, very hyper-articulate as a child because I was so unprepossessing physically. But, you know, I even say in the book, you know, I'm not, my face has never been my fortune. At the same time, it's also not a punchline. Like, you know, it doesn't charm people from the trees. It also doesn't have them running scared either. You know, it's okay, but it's not the thing that I present to the world. The thing I present to the world is talk, chatter.
It's clear, apparently, that you're working your way from 40 to 50, perhaps.
I am.
You're on the way.
Yes.
Yep. So, do you feel that you've achieved enough and you've enjoyed life enough so that you could actually say, if you did actually get sort of advice of, well, your own time is limited, would you be happy?
That's very interesting. You mean if I were to buy the farm in front of a bus tonight, you mean?
Mm.
I'm pretty glad and feel immensely lucky with what I've gotten to do so far. But I'd like to do more. I'd rather not buy the farm in front of a bus this afternoon. I'd like to work more. I'd like to. There are certain personal things that I'd like to achieve. But you know, things are both beautiful and tough all over. So, whatever. There's nothing I can do about it.
It's been lovely chatting with you. David Rakoff, author of Don't Get Too Comfortable, traveling around Australia at the moment, and I hope that you wind up very quickly with your third book being published.
From your mouth to God's ear, as they say. Thank you very much.
This Way Out Brisbane correspondent John Frame spoke with David Rakoff about his latest book, Don't Get Too Comfortable.
So what were the best gay films of 2008?
I need some time. I just don't know if this is really what I want. Seems like what you want.
Until I met him, I'd never known anybody to take such an interest in me.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
And how did we fare on TV?
I'm Dr. Eve, when you de-homosexualize me, will I still be able to perform as Tammy Wynette?
Hi, I'm Steve Pride. Join me in 2 weeks on This Way Out for a special look at Pride on Screen in 2008.
And next week on This Way Out...
I'll rock the show no matter where I go. I am the queen, the diva, honey, don't you know?
She's been dubbed a dyke diva.
I'm just speaking from my heart. I'm just speaking from my heart.
And his velvet gravel voice intones hauntingly beautiful songs. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. These are just two of the LGBT voices we featured on Audiophile this year.
Join us as we take a longer listen to our favorite seven on the Audiophile 2008 Year in Review. Here on This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, John Frame, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to postal mail CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Happy holidays, and thanks for listening on WOMR, Provincetown, Massachusetts, KVSC, St. Cloud, Minnesota, CFUV, Victoria, British Columbia, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.